Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jai. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 1, entitled The Supreme Lord is Equal to Everyone, text number 46. But first I'll read 44 and 45, and then we can all read 46 together. Okay, text number 44. Tatastho rakshaso jato keshinyam vishravasuto Ravana Kumbhakarnascha Savaloko Patapano. Thereafter, the same Jaya and Vijaya, the two doorkeepers of Lord Vishnu, took birth as Ravana and Kumbhakarna, begotten by Vishrava in the womb of Keshini. They were extremely troublesome to all the people of the universe. Text 45. Tatrapi Raghavo Bhutva Nyahanachchapa Muktaye Ramaviryam Shrosyasi Tvam Markandeya Mukhat Prabho. Narada Muni continued, My dear king, just to relieve Jaya and Vijaya of the Brahmana's curse, Lord Ramachandra appeared in order to kill Ravana and Kumbhakarna. It will be better for you to hear narrations about Lord Ramachandra's activities from Markandeya. Text 46, please repeat. Tav atra kshatriyo jato Matra swasra majotava Aduna shapa nirmukto Krishna chakra hatam haso Tav atra kshatriyo jato Matra swasratma jotava Aduna shapa nirmukto Krishna chakra hatam haso Tavatra kshatriyo jato Matra swasratma jotava Aduna shapa nirmukta Krishna chakra hatam haso Ladies, please. Kshatriya jata Matri swasratma jotava Aduna shapani mukto Please repeat, Tao, the two. Atra, here in the third birth. Kshatriya, Kshatriyas or kings. Jato, born. Matrasvastra Atmajo, the sons of the mother's sister. Tava, your. Aduna, now. Shapanir Mukto, freed from the curse. Krishna Chakra, by the disc weapon of Krishna. Hata, destroyed. Amuhasa, whose sins. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In their third birth, the same Jaya and Vijaya appeared in a family of Kshatriyas as your cousins, the sons of your aunt. Because Lord Krishna has struck them with His disc, all their sinful reactions have been destroyed, and now they are free from the curse. Purport. In their last birth, Jaya and Vijaya did not become demons or Rakshasas. Instead, they took birth in a very exalted Kshatriya family related to Krishna's family. They became first cousins of Lord Krishna and were practically on an equal footing with Him. By personally killing them with His own disc, Lord Krishna destroyed whatever sinful reactions were left in them because of the curse of the Brahmanas. Narada Muni explained to Maharaj Yudhishthira that by entering Krishna's body, Shishupala re-entered Vaikuntha Loka as the Lord's associate. Everyone had seen this incident. Om Ajnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Prasangam Ajram Pasam Atmano Kavayo Vidu Sa Eva Sadusho Krito Mokshadwaram Pavritam. Lord Kapila Dev told his mother Devahuti, there's this very, very special quality about devotees. Devotees themselves are so incredible, so special, that it's very, very important for us to understand exactly why and how to relate to them. He says that attachment for material things is the worst sort of suffering for a conditioned soul. And yet that same attachment applied to the self-realized souls, the devotees of the Lord, opens the door of liberation. Mokshadwaram apavritam. Herein we see the incredible superlative quality of Vaishnavas is that devotees are the ones that, how do you say it, like bridge the gap between the mundane and the transcendental for our behalf, for our sake. Because we can't perceive what is spiritual, we can't perceive what is Krishna, what is God, with our limited mundane senses. But we can perceive devotees, and the association of the devotees, that becomes realized to us. That potential is there to cross into the transcendental reality. And that's why it's really important to understand why it is that we worship devotees, why it is that we should appreciate devotees, rather than perceiving them in a limited, mundane way, with familiarity. And which ultimately leads to the sort of offenses that we're hearing about in these verses. When the four Kumaras came up to the gates of Vaikuntha, at that point, as far as I understand, especially from the Nectar of Devotion, they weren't devotees of the Lord. Is that right, Bhrigupati Prabhu? They weren't devotees of the Lord. And when they perceived the activities of Jaya and Vijaya, they became offended and cursed them. This whole thing played out. Jaya and Vijaya, by the way, are our two doorkeepers here. These are the murtis we have on each side of the altar. And so much trouble became of it. They were extremely troublesome to all the people of the universe. So it's important for us to know exactly how to relate to devotees. The fact of the matter is that devotees, it's not something we can really perceive with our material senses. Just like Krishna. And relating to devotees is not a material skill. Sometimes we come into the association of the Vaishnavas and we think, this will be easy for me. I'm very charismatic. I'm very outgoing. I'm quite funny. I'm very attractive. No doubt I'll just cruise through Vaishnava Sangha, get all of the blessings, you know, bada bing, bada boom, pure devotional service. It's all there, right? So what is it? Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoy. I'll get all those perfections. I know how to, you know, rub shoulders with the right people, how to placate all the persons whom I should be placating, right? How to give the appropriate approbations in certain areas and not in other areas. I can handle that. It's not actually how we associate with devotees. Unless we can understand the transcendental nature of Krishna, we can't understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's devotees, because that's their superlative quality. And yet, even such, the devotees make themselves available to us, regardless of our lack of understanding. As Lord Kapiladeva is saying, that same material attachment, when applied to the self-realized souls, opens the gates of liberation for us. As an example in this regard, I'll tell a short story about Krishna and some of his devotees, the Pandavas. Now, once upon a time, Krishna was in Dwarka, and he was enjoying, as he does, and he was advised by his council, particularly Uddhava, that the time had come to put an end to the wicked king Jarasandha. And they decided, this is a long story, of course, but they decided, rather than having another huge fight, let's do something a little bit trickier. And so Krishna goes to, I think it was Magendra, Jarasandha's kingdom, with Arjuna and Bhimasen. But just to make things more fun, as Krishna likes to do, they went dressed up as brahmanas, which must have been quite a sight, because Bhima himself was like 25 feet tall, massive arms and all those sort of things. And generally brahmanas are kind of like 90-pound weaklings, but somehow they put on the garb of brahmanas and they went up to the palace of Jarasandha, knowing well that he was very much inclined to giving his blessings to the brahmanas. And Jarasandha, I guess you could say, opened the door and saw these two brahmanas there, Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima. And, of course, he was a little bit suspect, saying these interesting-looking brahmanas with the marks of bowstrings on their arms and massive shoulders like lions and all that sort of stuff. But still, he said, okay, so what do you guys want? And of course, Krishna kind of revealed himself at that point and said, aha, you know, it's me, your eternal enemy, Krishna. And we want battle. We want to fight you. Now, Jarasandha, of course, because he can't understand Krishna, he can't understand Krishna's devotees either. So Jarasandha said to Krishna, he said, Krishna, I'm not going to fight with you because you're a coward. You ran away from battle, despite the fact that Krishna slaughtered his whole army 17 times. Still, he said, you're not worthy of fighting with me anymore. A little bit proud. And he said, Arjuna, I won't fight with you because you're younger and inferior. But Bhima, you're a worthy match for me. He was quite puffed up in this way. But Jarasandha couldn't understand that Krishna, he gives so much of himself to his devotees. He actually gives more of his own opulences to his devotees than he possesses himself. Imagine this. Sometimes persons make this argument, oh, God loves you so much, why doesn't he just make you God? Right? If you want to be God, why doesn't he just make you God? If he really loves you, he should just give you everything, right? Seems like a nice sort of sentiment. But that's exactly what Krishna does. As Bhagavan, the possessor of all opulences, Krishna shares his opulences to glorify his devotees even more than his own self. He gives the opulence of wisdom to his devotee Sandipani Muni and allowed him to instruct him. His beauty, even, he gave to Pradyumna, who's a jiva, who is practically just as attractive as Krishna himself. And his opulence of power and strength, he invested in Bhimasen so that Bhima could have the glory, the fame, and the privilege of killing Jarasandha when Krishna himself made it out as play that he couldn't do it himself. So the superlative qualities of devotees is that they are related to Krishna. It's not that we can perceive the devotees just based on external material qualifications. We can really get ourselves in a lot of trouble that way. And to try to relate to them with our material skills. That is, I can relate to this person because of race, color, or creed, because we have a similar background, therefore, you know, I'll do well with this one and not that one. you know, to some degree, we take that into account, to some degree, but ultimately, devotional service and relation amongst devotees is done through the medium of service. It's not a material skill, just like serving Krishna is not a material skill. It's a blessing, it's mercy that's bestowed upon us. So we need to learn how to associate with the Vaishnavas through the medium of service. Sometimes we do all sorts of other things to get ourselves into trouble. We like to get into astrology. I figured this person out. I know your chart. I know exactly what's happening with you. I know where you've been. I know where you're from. I know where you're going. You know, I know how to work your buttons, how to push your buttons or whatever. That can be really offensive, actually. The reason why we can't simply look at a devotee based on their, you know, their past material circumstances is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as a logical fallacy called Naga Matrika Nyaya. Those of you who read Chaitanya Charitamrita remember this particular story about Maharaj Prataparuja, who's this great king who wanted to meet with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya, just to increase the king's ecstasy ultimately, but he was playing like, oh, I won't meet with this king because, you know, I'm a renunciate and he's a sense enjoyer and all this sort of stuff. And this king was just like, his heart was just bursting to somehow come in contact with Lord Chaitanya. And so there was an arrangement made that the king's son would go and embrace Lord Chaitanya and come back. Just to make it possible for the king's son to do that, they dressed him up as a cowherd boy. But it's a pretty common trick, actually. Subhadra did the same thing to Draupadi after Arjuna acquired her as his wife. That's an whole another story, but we won't get into. But just to kind of like get the, you know, the special blessings of Lord Chaitanya, he went there dressed as a cowherd boy, knowing that Lord Chaitanya would be, you know, overwhelmed with love when he saw the king's son dressed in this way. And when he did, Mahaprabhu embraced him, tears flowing in his eyes for love of Krishna. And having been embraced by Mahaprabhu, this prince suddenly became a pure devotee. He also became overwhelmed with the ecstasy of love of God. Before that moment, he was not a devotee in the slightest. Srila Prabhupada points out in that purport, this Naga Matrika Nyaya, that you can't judge a person, a devotee, based on the previous circumstances, because that catharsis, or that incredible experience of coming to devotional service, changes everything. Naga Matrika Nyaya literally means the logic of your naked mother. I'm trying to keep everybody awake here. The logic of your naked mother, which states that, well, hey, your mother, when she was a child, used to run around naked. So why doesn't she just run around naked now? Of course, in Kali Yuga, some people might find that really interesting. But generally speaking, you would say that you wouldn't want your mother to run around naked now. She doesn't do that because the circumstances have completely changed. That now she has this position of being a mother. Now she has responsibility to set a certain example. She's not a child anymore. Being a mother is obviously a very profound experience that changes one entirely. So similarly, a devotee having come to devotional service, they're completely different. So we can't simply rest on our understanding of their previous qualities or activities as the sort of medium by which we relate to them. We have to be very, very careful about that. And the means of not falling into that trap is to always relate to devotees through the medium of service. That's the whole point. It's not a material skill. It's something we actually have to pray for the opportunity to do and for the ability to do. We can approach Gaur Nitai and say, these Vaishnavas, they're actually your parts and parcels. They're extensions of your own self, your Jiva Shakti. How am I to relate to them? Give me the opportunity and the skills to be able to swim, splash, dive, and drown in Vaishnava Sangha. That's really what we're looking for. And not to make the mistake of judging them based on so many external qualities will actually ruin the potential of Vaishnava Sangha in that way. You have to be very careful. A practical sort of thing that we can take into account, although it's not really a scriptural reference, but it's something I learned in the Vaishnava Institute of Higher Education Leadership Management course, is that So many of us, because we live in a close-knit community, obviously there's going to be disappointment with the behavior and the activities of so many devotees around us. And there's this tendency to criticize and to judge. Conditioned souls, as some of us might be, do that. And as we're constantly reminded in the shastras, it's like very, very dangerous, horrible thing to do. So how can we reconcile this tendency in us and not make that mistake? It's very simple. And if we take into account that we have a circle of concern in our life, this is what I learned in this management course. We have a circle of concern. You know, it might be like yay big, but I'm really concerned about what this person's doing, what that person's doing, you know, why they don't do things my way and so on and so forth. And then we have our circle of influence, which is usually a lot smaller. And sometimes we just have to accept that. But there's not always the facility for us to have to do anything about the particular nuances or qualities that we see in other devotees and to judge. Then maybe it's just out of our circle of influence. In fact, the culture of Vaishnavism is very much steeped in etiquette so that, you know, there's a limited number of persons who have that influence over everyone else, because that's a very sensitive subject to handle. To have to tell a devotee to do like this or to do like that. That's why we have our gurus and our leaders. And it's not the proprietary right of everyone else to judge and to jeopardize their own devotional service in that way. Very dangerous. And so it's something for us to consider. Our circle of concern might be very large. Our circle of influence, generally much smaller. Another example of a short one. Because today is the appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit, if I heard correctly. How we can make this mistake of judging a devotee, that for our benefit, Gadadhar Pandit exhibited a pastime of that sort. It's very esoteric, and there's a lot of deep insight into it. But at least if we look at it externally, we can get the proper understanding that once upon a time, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who is this really wealthy devotee, he was very opulent, he had all sorts of, luxuries in his life, had come into this area where Gadadhar Pandit was staying. He was, you know, being served by so many servants. They were rubbing oils on his bodies and fanning him and massaging him and so many things. And Gadadhar Pandit was advised to go and meet this Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And seeing him seemingly enjoying in this way, Gadadhar Pandit himself became a little bit bewildered. This is supposed to be a great devotee. I mean, look what he's doing. It's like being massaged and fanned. Can you imagine, like Eric sitting here, and while we're all in Bhagavatam class, he's got like some devotees fanning him and massaging his feet and whatnot. We'd be like, come on, you know, that's not so appropriate. It'd be a little bit strange. And so Pundarik Vidyanidhi was a bit confused in this way. And yet when he was in the association, Gadadhar Pandit was confused in this way, and yet when he was in the association of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, there was another devotee there, I think it was either Murari Gupta, Mukunda, who recited some shlokas. Which shloka was it? Aho bhaka yam stanaka lakutam jigam sayapaya yad apyasad vi lebe gatim datchitam uchi. How's it go? I can't remember now. But it's the verse about how Krishna is so merciful to the witch Putana that even though she came to kill him, Krishna bestowed his blessings, his mercy upon her so that she became a mother in the spiritual world. She said, how could I find any other merciful Lord besides Krishna? After having recited this verse, and Mukunda recited this verse, Pundarik Vidyanidhi just became completely overwhelmed in ecstasy, rolling on the ground and tears falling from his eyes, and tossing the oil this way and that, and throwing the fans aside that he was being worshipped with, and he was just completely overwhelmed. And Gadadhar Pandit, of course, could at that point understand his, you know, seemingly offensive behavior, and offered his obeisances to Pundarik Vidyanidhi, saying, "You're such an incredible devotee. Please accept me as your disciple." It's more or less what he did. Please make me your disciple. So the lesson that we can learn from this is that how do we relate to the devotees? How do we actually appreciate the transcendental nature of the devotees? It's not just with our eyes perceiving a certain race, you know, not just with our like our physical stature, you know, who's bigger, who has more titular superiority, and so on and so forth. It's about hearing and chanting in their association. That's what Vaishnava Sangha is for. Satam prasangam mamavirya sambhiro bhavanti ritkarna rasayanam kata tadjoshanad as... I'm losing it today. Just help me out, bro. Tadjoshanad asapavarga vartmani shvadaratim bhaktir anukramishati. That in the association of the devotees, that hearing and chanting about Krishna has rasaya, rasayana kata. That's where it has its real flavor. That's how we can appreciate Vaishnava Sangha. It's in the association of the devotees that we go from Shraddha to Rati to Bhava. We become very attached to the Lord in this way. If we're not hearing and chanting in the association of the devotees, what's the use? What's the use? Are we really making benefit of it? How can we appreciate their incredible quality without that hearing and chanting? So this is the medium by which we relate to the devotees, service and hearing and chanting. It's not a material skill. We have to pray for the opportunity from the Lord to be able to take advantage of it. And then our whole life in Krishna consciousness becomes incredible. Lacking that, we'll always be confused. We'll be thinking, what am I missing? What am I lacking? It's like I'm going through the motions, but it's not happening. Krishna himself describes this. Machchita madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. He says, my devotees, their minds are always fixed on me. They're always hearing and chanting about me amongst each other. Bodhayanta parasparam katayantascha mam nityam. They do this constantly. Tushyanti cha, ramanti cha. In this way they're enjoying life. So there has to be hearing and chanting about Krishna in the association of the devotees. It's not just a skill. We have to be very careful of thinking, I've got looks, I've got intelligence, I've got jokes, I've got whatever, and therefore, you know, I'm popular amongst the devotees, I'm going to go places, you know, I'm moving up in the world. It's a really dangerous mentality to have. The potential for offense is there. But if we're constantly hearing and chanting, well then, that's real life. That's real Krishna consciousness. So I hope that we can learn from some of this pastime here that even at the gates of Vaikuntha, that potential for misunderstanding a devotee is there, the potential for offense is there. What to speak of us in the throes of Kali Yuga in Los Angeles. My God. I was asked to finish a little bit early because I think I'm going to get some sort of pop quiz from Bhrigupati Prabhu, but perhaps before that, if there's any comments on these points or any questions about that, challenges. Bhrigupati Prabhuji.
Thank you, Bill. Beautiful class. You gave an example already in Gadadhar Pandit, but can you think of any other examples of devotees who got it right? You know, who sort of exemplify what you're pointing out in the class, you know, who understood how to properly associate and, you know, can you think of any other examples from any leelas that you care to...
Any leelas?
You know, from Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhupada, whatever. Any other examples of devotees who got it right, you know, success stories sort of thing?
Can I use an example from here in New Dwarka? And I'm not trying to like... I'm not one to just kind of like shamelessly glorify, you know, kind of like brown nosing. But I'd like to say that, in all honesty, a brilliant example is Bhrigupati Prabhu, in my humble opinion. Here's a devotee who, you know, obviously has a lot of stature because of his incredible, you know, experience in devotional service, you know, service record, which is not to be sneezed upon. And yet, I find that in my dealings with him, here I am like a proletarian sort of nobody in Krishna consciousness, and yet Prabhuji, because he has a very spiritual perspective, is kind enough to be a servant, even to, you know, a fool like me, to have that gentility and even humility in the association of someone who's inferior to him in so many respects. I think that's an important example for all of us as we're gradually becoming, you know, more, I guess senior is the term, devotees, and by the influence of time, naturally there will be devotees who are junior to us. We can still see in the example of Vaishnavas like Bhrigupati Prabhu that even as we become senior, still the mood is that I want to be a servant of even the junior devotees, but I'll serve them in the capacity of a leader, of a manager, as their senior. It's still a service attitude. It's not that I've actually become your Prabhu, you know, just simply by the influence of time or something. A lot of us, that's what we're holding out for. Can't wait till 20 years from now, I can just boss everybody around. Right? All I got to do is just stick around, and then I'll get my... It's just inevitable. No, but rather, we, as we see in Prabhu's example, as a service, he has the position of a leader and a senior to the rest of us. So there's one example I can think of. Perhaps you have another one, Bhrigupati Prabhu. Okay. Thank you very much. Krantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo.